Many of you are probably fans of C.S. Forrester's naval hero, Horatio Hornblower, or Patrick O'Brien's Jack Aubrey, played by Russell Crowe in the film Master and Commander. But what do you know about the real-life British naval officer who inspired both of these characters? Admiral Thomas Cochrane is largely forgotten in British history. And yet, he was one of the Royal Navy's most audacious and feared commanders during the Napoleonic Wars, known to his enemies as the Wolf of the Sea and El Diablo, the Devil. But it gets better. He didn't just fight in the Royal Navy, but also in the navies of Chile, Brazil, and Greece in their wars of independence too. And there's more, a clandestine marriage, inventing an engineering system still used to this day to construct tunnels, and which he worked on with the father of Isambard Kingdom Brunel. And a scandalous fall from grace, which resulted in him being expelled from Parliament and being stripped of his knighthood. It's time to shine a light on this amazing naval commander. The inspiration for Jack Aubrey and Horatio Hornblower, Thomas Cochrane, the real-life master and commander. Hi, I'm Chris Green, the History Chap, telling stories that bring British history to life. Thomas Cochrane was born near Hamilton, Scotland, in 1775, part of an aristocratic family who'd fallen on financial hard times. Indeed, the family estate was sold off in 1793, the year he joined the Royal Navy as a midshipman. Swiftly promoted to lieutenant, he then had his first brush with authority when he was court-martialed for insubordination. He received a reproach for being flippant to a senior officer. That minor infringement didn't prevent him being placed in command of a captured French vessel in February 1800. A month later, he was promoted to the rank of commander and placed in charge of a 14-gun sloop, HMS Speedy. Interestingly, Patrick O'Brien's hero, Jack Aubrey's first command, was also a 14-gun sloop, called the Sophie. Within 4 months, he'd captured 7 Spanish enemy vessels. Thomas Cochrane was already making a name for himself, and not just with the Admiralty in London. He discovered that the Spanish were now hunting for his small ship. In the first of many unconventional tactics throughout his career, Cochrane painted Speedy to look like a Danish brig that was also sailing in the Mediterranean. Having obtained a Danish flag and Danish uniforms, he then audaciously sailed merrily past the searching Spanish patrols. On another occasion, Cochrane and HMS Speedy were involved in a nighttime pursuit by an enemy warship. In an action that was directly lifted by Patrick O'Brien in Master and Commander, Cochrane tied a lantern to a barrel and set it adrift. The French ship ended up chasing the barrel in the darkness, and Cochrane slipped away. On the 6th of May, 1801, off Barcelona, Thomas Cochrane sighted an enemy vessel. The Spanish Navy's frigate, El Gamo, crewed by 319 men and with 7 times the firepower of the Speedy. Any normal commander would steer clear, but not Thomas Cochrane. He raised an American flag, and when the two ships were almost touching, suddenly ran up the British ensign. By now, HMS Speedy was too close for the Spaniard to depress his guns and fire on Cochrane's smaller ship. Cochrane, on the other hand, had mounted some of his guns so they could fire upwards. His opening salvo killed the Spanish captain. Unable to fire on their British adversary, the Spanish got ready to board instead. Suddenly, Cochrane pulled away and blasted the boarding party with his guns. And now he audaciously led his counterattack. Leaving the surgeon on board, he led his whole 50-man crew across onto the El Gamo. The size of the Royal Naval boarding party disconcerted the Spanish crew, who thought there must be even more British sailors on board the Speedy. This hoax was further enhanced when Cochrane shouted across to the surgeon to make ready the next wave of non-existent attackers. Cochrane then pulled down the Spanish flag, and the confused Spaniards, believing that their ship had struck its colours, dutifully surrendered. They had lost 14 killed and 41 wounded, more than the whole crew of the Speedy. Cochrane had lost just 3 killed and 9 wounded. Indeed, he would become renowned for his lack of casualties in actions. HMS Speedy then joined the 16-gun HMS Kangaroo, raiding along the eastern coast of Spain. Attacking a convoy of 12 merchant ships and 5 armed vessels, they captured 3 and sank or drove the rest of the fleet ashore. 3 weeks later, off Alicante, he found several merchantmen, ran them ashore, and set them ablaze. But on the 3rd of July, 1801, his luck ran out. A powerful French squadron en route from Toulon to Cadiz spotted the Speedy and gave chase. Despite Cochrane throwing provisions and even guns overboard, the French caught up and Cochrane struck his colours. When he was brought in front of Rear Admiral Charles Alexander Lenoir, the French commander refused to accept his sword, in recognition for his fighting prowess. He was already known to the French as Le Loup de Mer, the Sea Wolf. In his 13 months in command of the Speedy, Cochrane had captured, sunk or run ashore 53 ships. No wonder the Spaniards called him El Diablo, the Devil. He was later exchanged in a prisoner swap and promoted to the rank of captain. A brief peace in the war saw him take up studies at the University of Edinburgh, but hostilities resumed in 1803 and he was back at sea in command of the 22-gun HMS Arab. His first action was to intercept and board an American vessel, the Chatham. As America was neutral at this time, the incident had the potential to boil over into an international dispute. In an effort to both placate the Americans and punish Cochrane, HMS Arab was sent to protect the British whaling fleet in the northern seas. There's a saying, you can't keep a good man down, and having served his cold version of being sent to Coventry, Cochrane was back in favour in December 1804, commanding the 32-gun HMS Pallas. In 1808, he led Royal Navy landing parties to assist guerrillas fighting the French army in eastern Spain. By now, Thomas Cochrane was also a Member of Parliament. At this time, it was totally acceptable for serving military officers to also enter Parliament. This created some interesting situations where outspoken and relatively junior officers could use their parliamentary position to attack their superiors in the military. And you might not be surprised to know that Cochrane was just one such individual. But it was going to rebound on him, big time. Following the Battle of Trafalgar, the French fleet had been bottled up in their Atlantic ports. However, fearing a British attack on the sugar-rich French island of Martinique in the West Indies, Napoleon ordered his fleet to break out from the blockade and head across the Atlantic. The Royal Naval Blockade was being commanded by Admiral Lord Gambier. Gambier, a dour Methodist, was known to his men as Dismal Jimmy. When the French fleet began to gather at the mouth of the River Charon, which is about 20 miles south of La Rochelle, the Admiralty were keen to take action. This stretch of water, known as the Basque Roads or Axe Roads, was protected from the open sea by submerged sandbanks, meaning that Gambier's warships would struggle to get close to their enemy in the narrow channels. What was needed was something altogether more ambitious and daring. And whilst ambitious and daring were not two words associated with Dismal Jimmy, they did describe someone else that we know. Cochrane, despite being a relatively junior officer, was given command of the attack. On the night of the 11th of April, 1809, Cochrane led a small squadron of shallow draft ships, including fireships, into the Basque Roads. Fireships were the scourge of fleets during the age of timber and sail. Famously used against the Spanish Armada, these vessels containing explosives and other combustible materials, such as rum-soaked hay, would be set ablaze and then drifted towards the enemy fleet. Apart from the obvious damage that they could cause, their main purpose was to panic a fleet and disperse their formation. And that is exactly what happened at the Battle of Basque Roads. In their attempt to flee the fireships, many of the panicking French crews steered their ships onto the sandbanks. The French fleet were sitting ducks for Gambier's larger warships. Except Gambier chose not to attack. Despite further attacks by Cochrane over the coming days, in which he sank three ships of the line and two smaller vessels, this delay by Gambier enabled the French fleet to be refloated and sailed to safety, although they never did sail across the Atlantic. With the destruction of five French vessels for no losses of their own, the British public celebrated the Battle of Basque Roads as a definite victory for the Royal Navy. Cochrane was created a Knight Companion of the Order of the Bath. In other words, he became Sir Thomas Cochrane. As a Knight of the Order, he was allowed to hang his banner in their chapel inside Westminster Abbey. And by the way, that chapel and the current Knight's banners are still in use. However, the recriminations were to follow swiftly. As a Member of Parliament, Cochrane vocally ridiculed any attempt to reward Gambier for the victory. He used parliamentary privilege to effectively accuse him of cowardice. Gambier responded by requesting a court-martial to clear his name. The court-martial was packed with senior officers who supported the Admiral, and thus, not surprisingly, cleared him of any wrongdoing. Cochrane's bullish attack on his superior had rebounded on him. His Royal Naval career was effectively over. And it was going to get worse. A lot worse. In February 1814, a man wearing a red military tunic landed in Dover, claiming to be from the British Embassy in Russia. He brought momentous news. Napoleon Bonaparte had been killed. The stock market finally saw a light at the end of a 20-year period of conflict, and shares soared, in particular for government-backed securities. The only problem was Napoleon was alive and well. The envoy from Russia was nothing of the sort. It was all an elaborate hoax. The sudden rise and resulting profiteering by some individuals due to this hoax is known to history as the Great Stock Exchange Fraud of 1814. So where does Sir Thomas Cochrane fit in? Well, it so happens that Cochrane had only recently purchased a considerable sum of those government-backed securities. Upon the news, he moved with incredible speed and sold his holdings, making something like a 20% return. A 20% return in a month is pretty impressive, especially when that equates to well over £1 million in today's money. People smelt a rat. The committee of the Stock Exchange conducted an inquiry, and Cochrane and five others, including his own stockbroker and his uncle, were put on trial. At the trial, which many say was politically motivated as Cochrane was considered a radical, he was found guilty of fraud and sentenced to 12 months in prison. He was also expelled from Parliament. But an even worse humiliation was in store. Cochrane was removed as a Knight of the Order of the Bath. In a degradation ceremony, his banner was taken down in Westminster Abbey and literally kicked out of the door. But if you're thinking this is the end of the road, you're mistaken. The second half of Cochrane's life is possibly an even better story than the first. So, are you ready? With the Napoleonic War over, along with his naval and political careers, it was time for Thomas Cochrane to spread his wings. In 1818, he was met in London by a representative of General José San Martín, who was leading an independence movement against the Spanish in Chile. With nothing else on the cards, Cochrane accepted command of the Chilean Navy, and by the end of the year, he had arrived in South America with his wife, Catherine, and their six children. In true Cochrane style, his marriage to Catherine Barnes had also been unconventional and raised a few eyebrows. And not just because she was 20 years his junior. Back in 1812, Thomas and Catherine had eloped and married in a civil ceremony, a move so shocking that it resulted in Cochrane being disinherited by his uncle. Now Vice-Admiral of the Chilean Navy, Thomas Cochrane went back to doing what he did best, blockading and attacking the coastline still held by the Spanish, and capturing her most powerful ship in South American waters, the Esmeralda. Then with just two ships and 300 men, he attacked and captured the strongly defended port of Valdivia, effectively ending Spanish rule in Chile. El Diablo was back. With Spain's empire in South America crumbling, Chile would be independent by 1826, Cochrane felt his job was done and resigned. He now transferred his services to the independence movement in Brazil. Here, and somewhat bizarrely, the son of the King of Portugal, Pedro, had declared independence from his own father and the Portuguese Empire. Pedro placed Cochrane in charge of the Brazilian Navy, and for the next 4 years, Cochrane helped Brazil break away from the Portuguese Empire. With Brazilian independence secure, he now joined the Greeks in their fight for independence against the Ottomans. Cochrane resigned in 1828 when steamships that he'd requested weren't delivered. He was actually an early advocate of steam warships and took a keen interest in science and technological improvements in general. Back in 1818, he had patented a tunnelling shield with an engineer, Mark Isambard Brunel. Brunel and his more famous son, Isambard Kingdom, would go on to use that tunnelling shield as they constructed the Thames Tunnel in the 1820s and 30s. And tunnelling shields based upon Cochrane's design are still very much part of tunnel constructions to this day. In 1831, and now back in Britain, Cochrane inherited his father's title of Earl of Dundonald. With the ascension of King William IV, himself a former sailor, he was also pardoned for his fraud conviction. This enabled him to be readmitted to the Royal Navy, with the rank of Rear Admiral. However, the stubborn Cochrane, or Lord Dundonald as he now was, refused to accept an actual naval command until his Order of the Bath had been reinstated. Eventually, in 1847, King William IV's niece, Queen Victoria, reappointed him a Knight of the Order of the Bath. And with that, Cochrane agreed to accept the command of the North America and West Indies station at the age of 73. He was promoted to full admiral just before the outbreak of the Crimean War. It's often forgotten that during this war, the Royal Navy also fought the Russian Navy in the Baltic. There was never a serious naval clash, and the Royal Navy had to content itself with bombarding forts in modern-day Finland. That might, however, have been very different if the British Prime Minister, Lord Palmerston, had agreed to accept Thomas Cochrane's pleas to place himself in charge of operations in the Baltic. In the end, however, it was decided that he might risk the fleet in another bold, daring, Cochrane-style attack, and so he was passed over. Now, let's just pause for a moment. The British Prime Minister was worried that a man aged 79 was too bold and daring. Wouldn't we all like to be that when we're 79? Admiral Sir Thomas Cochrane, Earl Dundonald, died in London on the 31st of October, 1860. He was buried in the nave of Westminster Abbey, where the day before his funeral, his banner was finally rehanged in the chapel of the Order of the Bath. 6 Chilean naval vessels have been named after Admiral Cochrane, including a frigate, which is currently still in service. Every year, to this day, sailors from the Chilean Navy hold a wreath-laying ceremony at his grave at Westminster Abbey. Thomas Cochrane, what an incredible life and career. A daring and inspiring naval commander who fought for the freedom of not just his own country, but of Chile, Brazil, and Greece too. Forget Horatio Hornblower or Jack Aubrey. Thomas Cochrane deserves a film in his own right. Well, thanks for joining me today, and I hope you enjoyed that story from British history. This show is ad-free thanks to our supporters, so if you're enjoying my work, then please become a supporter by clicking on the links below. Also, drop me any questions, comments, or ideas for future shows at my website, thehistorychap.com. I'm Chris Green, The History Chap. Until next time, thanks for your support, keep well, and I'll chat to you again very soon.